The discovery of stickies in the area had cast a dampener over the pleasant day. There was very little conversation as they all picked their way down the path toward where they'd caught and cooked the trout.
Better if we have a council now.
Not much to talk about, is there?
No. Just do we go or do we stay?
There aren't any sticky tracks down here. I've seen worse places to spend a few days. You need a rest, Lava.
Maybe.
I don't think that any of us would refuse the possibility of a little gentle relaxation. I cast my vote for remaining here. But what of the rest of you?
I'm with you, Doc.
Me too!
That's already a majority. Anyone gonna disagree?
If we'd only made a single jump, then I'd say leave. You remember what the trader used to say about stickies, Ryan?
Yeah. He used to...
Company.
Hold the cab!
Come in slow and easy.
No shooting, friend.
Just come in slow and easy.
Five strangers walked toward them from the general direction of the big lake. None of them appeared to be over 20, and they all had a squeaky, clean, laundered look to them. All wore matching stone-washed jeans and pale denim shirts, and had hunting rifles slung over their shoulders. Every one had blue eyes and long blonde hair. There were four men and a woman.
Hold it! Don't get too close.
The two groups eyed each other. For some reason, Ryan noticed, they all seemed particularly struck with the appearance of Doc.
Good day to you, Outlanders.
Ryan nodded. They all kept looking at Doc, as if they couldn't believe what they were seeing.
How old is the old one?
Old enough to know it is regarded as rude to ask a stranger how old he is, young lady. Perhaps if we get to know each other a little better, then I might allow you the indulgence of asking me again.
He is very old.
Shh.
What are you doing in the lands of Auroville?
Didn't know it belonged to anyone. Didn't see any signs.
These are our hunting lands, not the planted lands, of course.
What's the name of the ville?
You don't know? We come from Quinley. It's about 12 miles north of here, alongside the Big Water.
Big Water have a name?
Champlain Lake.
Champlain.
Uh-huh.
You got a name?
We all have given names. You look like you could be near to 30.
What's this about our ages?
Nothing. Nothing. You ask my name. I'm called Dorothy. These brothers are Isaac, Ray, Bob, and Frank. Not truly brothers, except in the eyes of Moses.
That your baron?
No, we have no baron.
Ask them if they see my brother.
Of course. Yes, yes, Isaac. But all of that can wait, can't it?
What's he want?
He says to ask whether you've seen his brother, that is, his real brother. Julian went missing on a hunting trip, left the ville yesterday morning.
I haven't seen anyone for days.
What about the things we saw up the hill?
Up the hill?
Ryan had already made the guess that the charred log that hung from the ruined building above them could once have been the lost Julian. But the trader always used to say, you should take care that you never got involved with anything unless you didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
You had trouble with stickies around here?
Why? Have you seen...
Stickies got my brother? Got Julian? And you oldies know about it?
Oldies?
Moses told us not to ever trust oldies.
Isaac grabbed Dorothy by the shoulders, shaking her like a terrier with a rat. His face had gone as white as fresh-drawn milk, and his eyes burned.
If it's your brother up on the hill, then I'm afraid that he's dead. There's a single chilled sticky up there, too. The way it looks, they likely jumped him. But listen, it might not be your brother.
It's got to be him, Outlander. Any blasters with him?
There were shells from a .38.
Julian had his Winchester Repro. The Navy Arm 66. Plenty of ammo.
Navy Arm 66 was chambered for a .38. The stickies had one of their whiz-bang fires with the spare shells.
What about the dead sticky?
Gutshot. If it was your brother, Isaac, then he took a sticky out first. Then they got him.
Frank, you and Ray wait here with these people. Me, Isaac, and Bob will go. They're up by the old shelter, you mean? We'll take a look. Then maybe we'll all go to Quinley. You'd be welcome as our guests for a day or so.
That'd be good.
Yeah, thanks. I just better warn you that what they did to whoever it is wasn't nice. Wasn't nice at all.
Stickies never do nice, lady.
Ray and Frank walked off and sat close together on the bank of the stream, saying nothing either to Ryan or the friends, or to each other. It was nearly 2 hours before the woman and two men came back down the hillside. There was no need to ask whether the blackened corpse had been that of the one they called Julian. Their shocked, dulled faces gave the answer.
We We've taken him down and spoken a saying over him. We couldn't bury him, but we put him safe from the animals. Friends will return tomorrow and bring him to Quinley for the proper saying. Now we should all go back there and report to Moses what happened, and to warn of the cursed stickies.
Dorothy turned on her heel and led them all off into the trees toward the distant lake.
This place looks like a promo vid for the Department of Agriculture. You ever see a better kept build than this, Ryan?
They had crossed the narrow river at a narrow wooden bridge made from fresh treated timbers and held in place by an ingenious system of bolts and thick knotted rope. Then they followed the five young people along a clear trail through the mainly coniferous forest, heading toward the lake. Feeling stronger by the hour, Ryan had handed the sword stick back to Doc and retaken his place as leader of the group. He walked at the front, keeping them on orange alert because of the threat from stickies. Gradually, the trees began to thin out, showing obvious evidence of good land management. They could see the silvery sheen of the water ahead of them, and then the woods ended and they were out in the open. Dorothy stopped and waved her hands over her head as a signal to armed guards in a tall watchtower set in the middle of the cultivated land. The others looked around. Brian saw immediately that Mildred was right. It was a showpiece. The fields were tended beautifully, the produce in neat rows. Fences and hedges divided one crop from another, all the way from the edge of the forest to the shore of the lake, which was a body of water that stretched to the far horizon. There were 20 or 30 men and women working in the fields, all of them looking up and waving at the sight of Dorothy and the four men. One of the women was driving an ancient John Deere tractor. Even at a quick glance, the range of what the ville grew was impressive. Ryan could see the feathery tops of carrots in the nearest field. There were potatoes, squash, okra, peas, several kinds of beans, and even what looked like grapevines.
Got fruit trees over there.
6 kinds of apples, for cooking and eating. 3 sorts of pear. Tried oranges and lemons, but the old blue northers did away with them. Got peaches under glass, melons. So many melons we regularly have to plow half back into the fields. But nothing's wasted, like Moses tells us.
Dorothy and Isaac had run on ahead and were obviously passing on the bad news about his brother. Several of the group in the field started to weep, while others made threatening gestures with the rifles that all of them carried. Dean looked up at the young man named Frank.
You had trouble with stickies before?
Not often. Used to be some outlanders coming down from old Canada.
You got good discipline here. I'm impressed.
What would an oldie like you know about things like that?
J.B. stared at Frank, completely without any expression on his sallow face, until the younger man finally dropped his eyes and looked away. Now Dorothy was walking quickly back toward them, along the main track that wound into the ville. The one thing that Ryan hadn't yet seen was the ville itself. Because of the lay of the land, it wasn't possible to be sure, but the pathway looked like it cut sharply to the left, over a narrow promontory that jutted into the lake.
The brothers and sisters are deeply moved. Isaac has gone on to tell Moses about you outlanders.
You got the best-kept ville I ever saw.
Dorothy looked at the others, but seemed to concentrate on Dean and Michael.
Thanks. The rest of you can come into Quinley and eat and stay a night if you want.
Sounds good.
Mildred smiled at the woman, who turned blankly away. The ville, as Ryan had figured, lay just beyond the piece of land that reached out into the lake. There was another similar causeway, about 50 paces in length, with the ville on what had once obviously been a small offshore island at its end.
Good place to defend.
As long as you don't get attacked by a mess of men in boats.
Everyone in the ville looked amazingly healthy. Not one of them seemed to have any physical imperfections at all. And every one of them was younger than the mid-20s. The blue shirts and jeans were almost a uniform. As Ryan and the others walked along, every head turned toward them. The big green John Deere slowed to a stop, and its driver leaned out to get a better look at the strangers. Once again, there was the odd feeling that Doc was some kind of leper. The young people's faces showed something close to a disbelieving revulsion at him.
Is there something wrong with me, Dr. Wyeth? Some indiscretion of my attire? They're all staring at me like I have my dick sticking out, if you'll pardon my French.
Of course I'll pardon it, Doc. And it's hanging out, not sticking out.
Very amusing, madam.
A high wall of sharpened stakes surrounded the perimeter of the ville. Right at the edge of the water, so any potential enemy would find no landing for a footing. There appeared to be about 20 or 30 buildings, many of them obviously storage barns, with roofs of closely thatched reeds.
Not many small houses.
We live in dorms. Men in one and women in the other, over there.
No privacy? No married couples?
Dorothy stopped so quickly that Christy nearly stepped on her heels.
Marriage? All of us who live here in Quinley have set that oldie idea behind us. Moses has pointed out the total stupidity of it.
I'm looking forward to meeting this Moses. He sounds like quite a guy.
Dorothy opened her mouth, then hesitated and closed it again. She stood looking down at her feet, as if she were taking counsel from an inner voice.
I know you are old and an outlander, but you will not speak of Moses like that.
Listen, kid, I'm getting seriously pissed about all this old shit. I'm still a good few years the right side of 40, so just ice it, will you?
40?
That's when life begins. Just how do you treat all the old people you got here in this ville? Your own mothers and fathers, for instance.
Moses tells us that... No, you're right. It's rude of me to show you how we... Food and rest should come before talk.
I'll go along with that. I confess that I would not be averse to a good long rest.
Oh, you will have that.
You got no animals. How's that?
We have no need for them, Outlander. Moses teaches us that the exploitation of cattle or horses or any other creature is wrong.
Vegetarians?
Yes.
Well, then I guess a juicy steak with all the trimmings is out of the question.
Ryan's joke was ignored. Dorothy turned on her heel and continued toward the causeway to the ville.
Like Uncle Tice McCann used to say back in Harmony, lover. That went over like a lead balloon.
The water was cold and very clear. The shore shelved steeply, but even halfway toward the entrance gate to Quindley, it was easy to see the speckled fish moving sinuously near the weeds on the lake's bottom.
How deep is it here?
On the far side of the ville, it drops away to well over 100 feet.
And you don't eat no fish?
Yes, we do eat no fish. While in our home, you will eat no fish also.
An armed guard on the fortified gates watched suspiciously as Dorothy led the 7 Outlanders into the ville. Ryan paused a moment before entering, looking back across the water and the immaculately tilled fields toward the shadowed bank of the sweeping forest. Every bright young face was turned toward him. But he also caught a glimpse of something else right at the edge of the pine trees. It was a blurred flash of white. A face? Maybe an animal. By the time Ryan had focused his eye on it, there was nothing there. Once they were inside the ville, they were able to see that it was laid out on a sort of grid pattern. The streets were packed earth, laid over interlocked logs, the whole of the place locked together with massive cross members made from whole trees. Though it was actually floating, tethered to the land by the causeway, there was no sensation of movement.
Something's not right here.
What?
You feel anything?
Something. I can't tell.
Triple red watch?
Oh, yeah.
They were met by a tall young man. Like everyone else, he was wearing jeans and a shirt, his long blonde hair tied back in a ponytail.
Good day to you. My name is Yehu, and I am the chosen instrument of Moses.
You're young to be in charge of a ville like this. How long you been the Baron?
You speak as a true outlander. We have no Baron.
Leader? Chief? What's in a name, Yehu?
Our laws come from Moses. I am his chosen instrument, just for a single year.
How do you mean? You mean you just run the place for a year, then someone else does it? I heard about villes like that, especially in the old Bible Belt lands. How long before you hand over?
I end as the summer ends. I fall with the fall. How old are you, John Dix?
More than 30 and less than 40. How about you?
This is my 25th summer.
It's a good age to be. It doesn't seem that long ago that I was in my 25th summer.
You are past it, truly?
Truly. Does it matter?
The woman glanced at Yehu, who imperceptibly shook his head.
No, it doesn't matter. Not much.
Michael and Dean here are the only ones under the age of 25. You keep picking on age and being old. What's so special about being over 25?
It is possible that you will get to speak with Moses before you leave us. Ask him.
Where does Moses live?
He doesn't live in the way you might understand. Moses is here and there and everywhere.
Like a god?
Better than a god. A god is someone who doesn't exist. Moses exists.
Does he have a house with many mansions?
Doc pointed ahead of them, to the only stone wall building in the ville. It was circular, with a conical roof of fresh thatch. The back wall was directly against the outer defensive stakes.
His spirit dwells there.
Not his body? Don't we get to actually see him?
Nobody at all gets to see Moses. Except the boy or girl honored by being chosen as the leader for the year.
Moses picks them personally?
Not himself. But when they are permitted to let fall the reins of their time, it is Moses who releases them.
Sister, it will soon be time for the ending of work for the day. After prayers, the Outlanders can come and sit with us at our meal.
Does Moses?
Yes, he knows. Moses knows all, sister.
Blessed be that knowledge.
Amen to that.
Can we wash up?
Of course. There's a building set aside for Outlanders who are permitted to stay in Quindley. But it is a place divided.
Divided? What do you mean?
Men on one side and women the other. As you will not stay long, the old and young can remain together.
Yehu spread his hands like a market huckster displaying his wares. Ryan felt his temper flaring, but Christy sensed it and gripped him by the wrist.
It's only for a night. Two with the outside lover. It's not a problem. We're guests in their vills, so we play the game by their rules.
When in Rome, one must do as the Romans do.
A traitor did a good deal in Rome once. Bunch of knives.
In Rome? I had not realized that the gentleman was familiar with the Eternal City.
Halfway between Atlanta and Chattanooga, Doc. That the place you mean?
Not quite, my dear John Barrymore. Not quite.
Ryan looked around the semi-circular room. Its longer, flat wall of feather-edged boards was what divided them from the women's half of the thatched building. The floor was tongue-and-groove planks. J.B. sat on one of the narrow wooden beds, laying his Uzi across his lap. Doc lay on another bed, his hands locked above his head, staring up at the ceiling.
Bugged?
No. Quindley doesn't look much like a high-techville to me. Fact is, it looks the opposite. Like those places with Amish barons. Can only just about bring themselves to use the wheel.
I was never comfortable with thatch above me. I fear that some great cockatrice will tumble into my snoring mouth while I sleep.
Once I had a muty rat fall on me, Doc. Tried to bite my tongue right out before I was fully woked up.
By the three Kennedys, you poor mite. What happened?
I bit its head off.
It had it coming.
Right. Hot pipe, but you should have seen the look on its face when I spat it out in the dirt.
What do you make of this place, J.B.?
Like to meet up with this Moses.
Yeah, I know what you mean. All this clean, healthy living. There's got to be something wrong.
On the other side of the partition, Mildred and Christy had reached the same conclusion. They shared a bucket of cold, clear water, struggling to get anything approaching a lather from the cake of soap, having to be content with a greasy scum on their skin. Christy had considered washing her hair, but changed her mind.
What do you reckon about this place?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Neat and tidy.
Healthy.
Clean.
Too clean?
Could be.
It's like I once visited Disneyland over in Los Angeles. It was wonderful and I had a great time, but maybe it was just a little too squeaky clean. Same feeling here.
And they're all so damned young.
Still, they've been okay with us, Christy. Apart from being snotty about how old we all are. All except Dean and Michael, of course.
The way they look at Doc, it's like he's carrying a living curse.
Think we might be able to find a way around that partition for tonight?
Can't you and J.B. do without it just for one night?
Yeah, it isn't just the sex, though that's real good. It's being close to someone you love. There. Now I've said it. Love. Don't you feel that with Ryan?
Sure I do, Mildred. There's been times when we pass through somewhere real beautiful that I want to settle down with Ryan and raise kids and all that shit. Other times it seems we can only ever keep running and chilling.
They don't call this place Deathlands for nothing.
I know. I've seen more corpses in the last couple of years than...
Then I've had hot dinners? That's the saying from my time. But I haven't had all that many hot dinners since I woke up here in Deathlands.
Well, if the meal that they promised us is as good as the stuff looked growing in their fields, we could be in for a real treat.
Light's going.
They don't have a generator. No electric power.
I saw a couple of gas tanks along by the place where this Moses lives.
My recollection of New England makes me think that it could be somewhat cold in the winter. I admire the morality of those who eschew meat-eating, but I cannot conceal my carnivorous desires for a good chunk of flesh every now and again. I am wondering just how much longer we will be kept waiting.
Here comes Dorothy.
How did you get all the blasters your people carry?
The blasters?
Yeah. Guards on the tower and the ones on the gate all got good long guns. Brownings, Mannlicher Model S, chambered for a .375 round, a couple of Marlins, a nice Winchester. Not many hand blasters, though.
Moses knows the answer about the blasters. I heard there was a store in town, miles off from Quinley, but this was all long ago. It was called Jolly Jack's Sporting Goods. At least I think that was the name.
Yeah, they'd sell mainly rifles and scatter guns.
How long has Quinley been run like this?
Run like what?
Neat and not eating meat and well-guarded?
Since the day before yesterday. That's what Moses says to tell outlanders who keep asking too many prying questions.
How many people live here?
That's the end of questions. We have to go for the meal.
Come on, tell us how many live here.
For you, Dean, you aren't spoiled. Like, there are 37 men between 15 and the top, 46 women.
What's the top mean?
The top is what we in the Ville call the ending time. But I have spoken too much, much too much, Michael.
Where are all the children?
You heard her say no more questions.
No. He and Michael may ask me anything they wish.
Well?
Young ones, below 5, live in one building. Middle ones, from 5 to 15, live apart as well.
Ahead of them, the large double doors of one of the thatched huts swung open, spilling a lake of golden light across the packed earth. Yehu stood there, staring out into the darkness of the evening.
You're late, Sister Dorothy.
We're coming!
The delicious smell of cooking seeped out from the long dining hall. The air was smoky from the lights, and from the ovens that could be glimpsed through a door to the rear of the building.